from deep inside your radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, the job one for spokespersons for the Bush administration this weekend has been to take to the airwaves, take to the TV yak shows, and clarify those briefings. They weren't specific. They didn't say they were going to hit a thing with a thing. They said a thing with a thing. And chief among those spokespeople hitting the airwaves with that that defense, of course, Vice President Dick Cheney up from the bunker. But we learned this week that Vice President Dick Cheney took to different airwaves earlier on to deliver a slightly different message. Arthur Andersen LLP is a remarkable accounting firm because it offers over and above just sort of the normal by-the-books auditing arrangement. Unquote. Dick Cheney. Yes. He was speaking to a camera in a 35 seconds marketing spot for Arthur Andersen just before he was elected as vice president. Cheney said, quote, I get good advice, if you will, from their people. Good advice, if you will, from their people. 35 seconds, take the if you will out, babe. I get good advice, if you will, from their people based upon how we're doing business and how we're operating, over and above just sort of the normal by-the-books auditing arrangement, unquote. The tape was handed out to Andersen Partners. Disclosure of the Andersen comments comes as the Bush administration continues to distance itself from Kenny Boy. The tape was used by Andersen well after Cheney became vice president. Andersen appears to have hyped Cheney's appearance by referring to him on the video and in marketing material as Vice President Dick Cheney, formerly of Halliburton. Actually, he was with Halliburton, this big oil tool business. Don't get ahead of me. I know we're all oil tools now. When he made the video. This is from the Wall Street Journal, by the way, ladies and gentlemen. Cheney wasn't paid. His office says it was unaware of Andersen's decision to write in his new title. An Andersen spokesman says the Cheney segment was taped in February 1997. Who knew? That's all you can say. Who knew they were going so far above and beyond the by-the-books auditing arrangement so as to get them into a federal courtroom, I believe, is where they are now. So you can't know these things unless you knew them. But who knew? Who knew, department, ladies and gentlemen? That's all the only conclusion you can really draw, isn't it? So relax. Hello, welcome to the show.
say goodbye. So if there's another, I don't want to know. If you should go, oh, I would surely die. You would never leave me, hurt me or deceive me. I'm a poker down to where it's so about you. Love requires hands, I've got a lot of pain. But I hear the music coming out of your radio.
In 1844, the Democrats were split. The three nominees for the presidential candidate were Martin Van Buren, a former president and an abolitionist, James Buchanan, a moderate, Lewis Cass, a general and expansionist.
Kisi oyam, 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 kisi oyam Somebody sing. Somebody sing.
Hello, hello, hello.
Somebody sing. Somebody cry.
Why, why, why?
Somebody sing. Somebody sing.
Hello, hello, hello.
Somebody sing. Somebody cry.
Why, why, why?
Somebody sing.
Eat your mama. Eat your mama. Yes, I know, but no, Kili's way.
Somebody sing. Somebody sing.
Hello, hello, hello.
Somebody sing. Somebody cry.
Why, why, why?
Somebody sing. Somebody sing.
Hello, hello, hello.
Somebody sing. Somebody cry.
Why, why, why?
Kulumani, kuluman, kulumani siswe. Singenze njani, baya jabula basithanda yo.
From the home of the homeless, from the edge of America. Hello, I'm Harry Shearer. This being another edition of the show. Ladies and gentlemen, was it not me, you know how these questions are answered, don't you? Was it not me who said on the first of these broadcasts after September 11th that this country has an inexhaustible appetite to believe that it just lost its innocence? Because everybody was saying after September 11th, well, we lost our innocence. And we love to believe that we, God, it fell into the bed again. Just our innocence just rolled under the furniture. So now, in the wake of the all the television networks rolling out their programs for the fall schedule, previewing them for the advertising community, don't you know? Yes, it's a community. This week in New York, we are told that one of the offerings is a comedy which views the 1960s as a more innocent time. Now, those of you who lived through the 1960s in a sentient form may recall that it didn't seem all that innocent. People then look back on the 50s as an innocent time, and people in the 50s look back on the 20s as an innocent time, and so forth and so on. So, in a clip shown at the Fox presentation, Fox! Hey, they need a hit, don't they? The family spends a weekend at a bomb shelter fearing a nuclear attack. This is a comedy. You see, that's a more innocent time when families spent a weekend at a bomb shelter because of the Cuban Missile Crisis. That's the innocence we miss now, you see. And another show, NBC's favorite, the favorite show of the head of NBC programming, American Dreams, is about some folks, a teenage girl in Philadelphia in the 60s who longs to be an American Bandstand. Well, that was an innocent time. It was right after the Paola scandal. Somebody was innocent, mysteriously. So there was some innocence to be, at least to be obtained. Oh, here's a surprise, ladies and gentlemen. President Bush's top drug policy advisor says the government's anti-drug ads are being ignored by teens. Who would have thought that? Who would have thought those pesky teens are ignoring those ads? By the way, that you and I are paying for. These are not donated by the television networks anymore. These are being paid for by the taxpayers. A survey finds no evidence the multi-million-dollar campaign is discouraging drug use. The survey actually charted an increase in drug use among some teenagers who saw the television ads. It noted that further analysis is necessary before the ads could be directly tied to the increase. I hope that analysis comes before the analysis of the terrorist threats, because that all these analyses are a little bit... By the way, Leslie Moonves, head of CBS, apropos of looking for a more innocent time, said that proudly his network was ahead of the nostalgia curve. Yes. Yes, such a thing is possible. These, back to the drug, anti-drug ads. These ads aren't having an impact on teenagers, says Tom Riley, a spokesman for the White House Drug Policy Office. We've spent millions on these ads, and we're not seeing a return on the investment, unquote. That's the guy in the office saying that, ladies and gentlemen. That's not a critic. Celine Dion is causing distress to Macintosh computer users, rendering their brand new iMacs unusable. Her latest CD, A Day Has Come, is one of a number of recent album releases that features copy protection technology, which prevents it from being played or recorded in a computer. We've talked about this. I have. You've listened. Hopefully. Last month, Celine Dion fans, yes, they do exist, were warned that playing the CD on a computer could cause the machine to crash and possibly damage the computer itself. It transpires that if the Canadian singer's disc is placed in a new iMac, the flat-screen version, the fancy schmancy new one, the CD cannot be removed or the computer restarted. The machine then has to be sent for repair. You have to return it to Apple and ask its technicians to remove the Celine Dion CD from the drive. An Apple dealer confirms to the Campaign for Digital Rights that playing the disc in an iMac will result in the machine having to be sent in for repair. Other titles featuring the technology include new releases by Natalie Imbruglia, David Gray, the Star Wars Episode II soundtrack, and the new CD by Sting. So if you want to boycott some CDs because they may crap up your computer, those would be the ones to start with, ladies and gentlemen. But on the other hand, although the copy protection schemes can screw up your computer, your computer, or somebody's computer, can screw up the copy protection. You don't even need a computer to screw up the copy protection screen scheme. How about duct tape and marker pens? That's right. One hack works by covering up the outer ring of a copyright-protected audio disc. Simply covering up the outer track disables the protection, allowing the disc to be played as normal in a computer, even a Mac. The technique seems crude, but one reader of a technology journal says it was able to use it to defeat the copyright protection on that very Natalie Imbruglia CD just mentioned on this broadcast. Process is pretty easy, he says. I took a bit of electrical tape and applied it to the edge of the CD, the shiny side, just a half inch of the stuff, and aligned it with the very edge data track session ring visible on these copy-protected CDs. It played with no problems at all. Okay, so, it giveth, they taketh away. Ladies and gentlemen, we still don't know, really, who came up with the axis of evil phrase that President Bush used in that speech early this year, referring to North Korea, Iraq, and Iran. It was in the State of the Union, wasn't it? Now, at the very radio station at which this broadcast originates, in Santa Monica, a new commentator lists in his bio this. Quote, David Frum, former economic speechwriter for President George W. Bush, is credited with creating nearly all of the phrase axis of evil, unquote. It's a three-word phrase, ladies and gentlemen. He created nearly all of it. Yes, he did. And now... There just was a pause for thinking. for counting up the number of words in a three-word phrase. Some tales of airport security for your listening pleasure. By the way, before we get to these, I should just point out this observation. As of the current period, all inspection of automobiles, private automobiles, seeking to enter Los Angeles International Airport. This inspection was instituted after they started to allow private automobiles back into the airport. That was after they stopped private automobiles from coming to the airport. That inspection is gone. You can just drive in now. No inspection. But to get onto the physical properties of any of our major movie studios, you have to open your trunk. From Claire, in February, I had my wallet stolen in Chicago just before a trip to New Orleans. At Midway Airport, I was waved past all security posts after just a glance at my e-ticket and my old college ID, which did have my picture, name, and birth date, but was quite expired. When I got down to New Orleans, however, I was denied alcohol at several locations, including a 24-hour laundromat bar, because I didn't have a current government-issued piece of identification. This was despite being accompanied on one occasion by my mother and later by a City of New Orleans homicide detective, both of whom insisted that I was of appropriate age. Sort of like my story about the studio in the airport. And another story of airports and substances. This is from a listener who just gives initials. So it's probably apocryphal. Quote, I have a tale regarding airport security. This past Christmas, I flew from Portland to Boston. My husband and I had an early morning flight out of Portland. We waited for, 1.5 hours in a line that didn't seem to move very fast, trying to get through security and get to our plane on time. This was our first post-9/11 flight. Realizing that my tweezers were a potential weapon, I tossed them out. My husband had on a pair of work boots. He wondered if they would set the metal detectors off, but decided to wear them because of their lack of steel toes. Inside one of the boots, he had some marijuana in a plastic bag. We got to the front of the line, frantic because our plane was about to take off. Hey, chill. That's just me. The security people seemed pretty uptight. There were National Guardsmen standing watch, and they were fairly rigorous in their instructions to us to remove our keys, jackets, etc. before we went through the detectors. There was an edgy feel in the air. Maybe everyone was aware that it was Christmas, and a great time for an attempted attack. I made it through just fine, along with our 6-year-old son. But when my husband walked through the metal detectors, apparently the rivets on his boots set off the detector. They brought out the wand. As they were checking him out, he was using his toes to squish the pot as far into the boot as he could. Finally, they made him take his boots off. They sent them through the X-ray machine and saw nothing. Then one of the security guys took the boots and actually searched the inside of each one with his hand. Maybe he doesn't know what a bag of pot feels like, but whatever the reason, he wholly failed to locate it. My husband was given his boots back. He put them on, grabbed his stuff, and we ran to our gate. Unfortunately, these failed efforts at airport security took so long that we missed our plane anyway. But at least we got to keep the pot. Tales of airport security for your listening pleasure on the show.
She didn't say yes, she didn't say no. She didn't say stay, she didn't say go. She only knew that he had spidered there. And then she knew he sat beside her there. At first there was heard not one little word. Then coyly she took one sly little look, and something awoke and smiled inside. Her heart began beating wild inside. So what did she do? I leave it to you. She did just what you do too. Didn't say yes, she didn't say no. They very soon stood beside his chateau. They lingered like two poor waifs outside, for well she knew 'twas only safe outside. And there it was warm, out there it was cold. The sleet and the storm said, better be bold. She murmured, I'm not afraid of ice. I only wish that I was made of ice. So what did she do? I leave it to you. She did just what you do too. She didn't say yes, she didn't say no. She wanted to stay, but knew she should go. She wasn't so sure that he'd be good. She wasn't even sure that she'd be good. She wanted to rest, all cuddled and pressed, a palpable part of somebody's heart. She loved to be on rapport with him, but not behind a bolted door with him. And what did she do? I leave it to you. She did just what you do too. She didn't say yes, she didn't say no. For heaven was near, she wanted it so. Above her sweet love was beckoning, and yet she knew there'd be a reckoning. She wanted to climb, but dreaded to fall. So bided her time and clung to the wall. She wanted to act and leave it dumb, but feared to lose her equilibrium. So what did she do? I leave it to you. She did just what you do too.
This is Le Show, and now, the Apologies of the Week.
We're so sorry.
Exclusive feature of this broadcast, of course. Who else would do this for you? First, from New York, AOL Time Warner executives acknowledged this week they made serious missteps over the past year in overpromising financial results. They pledged to work hard to restore the company's battered stock price and credibility with investors. This past year has been difficult. Things didn't go quite as we expected, said Chairman Steve Case. We have to work to regain your confidence, he told the stockholders. Charlie Rose did not host this meeting. We have made some mistakes in the past year, Case said, like setting profit targets that were too high and sticking with them too long. But he said the company was getting its house in order, and will deliver on the promise and premise of the merger. It has both a promise and a premise, you see, ladies and gentlemen. The merger of AOL and Time Warner. But no, Charlie Rose did not host this. Hence the anger of the stockholders. We're paying you guys to be full-time employees. Get the job done, said a private investor, who chastised Case for spending time away from the job for family reasons. These are our hard-earned dollars. You've decimated them. Get working. Robert Hsu, a retired freelance writer, asked managers of the company why they were replicating the Taj Mahal in Columbus Circle. They're building a lavish new headquarters building after posting a loss of $54 billion. They lost $54 billion in the first quarter. Yeah, I'd apologize. And I'd have Charlie Rose host my shareholders meeting just to, you know, make things nice. Some cardinal apologies. Roman Catholic Cardinal William. Now, by the way, I asked this question last week. When did they stop putting the cardinal in the middle of the guy's name? And although most news media don't do it anymore, I saw some TV news channel. Was it Fox? I said news. Still follows the old practice of Stefan Cardinal Wyszynski. But anyway, they don't do it anymore, most of them. Roman Catholic Cardinal William Keeler, Archbishop of Baltimore, apologized for the first time just Friday to victims of church sex abuse, including the man who shot and wounded a Baltimore priest he says molested him as a teenager. Dante Stokes is the man who shot the wounded the local priest. Stokes' family says he had sought an apology from the priest, Reverend Maurice Blackwell, but was rebuffed. Said the cardinal, "I take this occasion to express publicly my apologies to all who have been victims, and in a very special way to Mr. Stokes, who has suffered intensely because of the difficulties in which he now finds himself and in which we find ourselves." Cardinal Keeler prayed for more vigilance in the protection of young people and described the scandal rocking the church as a learning process that has been instructive and painful. Keeler also said in a newspaper article he regretted his decision to reinstate that priest, Blackwell, as pastor of St. Edward Catholic Church after he was accused of sex abuse by the then 17-year-old Stokes. Authorities had dropped their investigation of Stokes' claim in 1993 for lack of evidence, but told church officials the allegations were credible. And in Los Angeles, right next door to the home of the homeless, Cardinal Roger Mahoney, head of the largest archdiocese in the United States, did you know that? Has admitted his direct role in keeping secret a case of child sexual abuse by a local priest, who then continued to molest children for another 14 years. Mahoney said in a letter to priests in the area that Reverend Michael Baker had confessed to him personally in 1986 about problems in the past of acting out sexually with minors. Mahoney said after counseling and treatment, he had assigned Baker to a number of different parishes until 2000, when the archdiocese was sued by two brothers in Arizona, who alleged Baker had continued to molest them for 13 years after his initial confession. In his letter to 1,200 priests in the L.A. Archdiocese, Mahoney admitted full responsibility for allowing Baker to remain a priest and offered his sincere, personal apologies for not taking decisive action earlier. But Baker, I'm getting lost here. Mahoney, where's Mahoney? That's Mahoney. Oh, Baker has since been accused, that's the priest who's been, has since been accused of molesting eight other boys in the late 1970s and 80s. If I had known in those years what I discovered in early 2000, said Archbishop Mahoney, Cardinal Mahoney, I would have dismissed him from all ministry and requested his dismissal from the priesthood in the late 1980s. Yeah. So those are the apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen. They are very, 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 very sorry. And now, it is time for me to read the trades for you. Dedicated to all those of you who, like me, say to yourself every time you see this guy on television, dude, you're getting to death. I read Stephen putting emotion back in computer market stuck on cost and function from Advertising Age. I'll read it for you. A dude named Stephen could help do for the personal computer market what a sledgehammer-wielding woman did nearly two decades ago. Apple Computer broke new ground with its 1984 spot for Macintosh. 18 years later, the PC has become virtually a household appliance, and advertising has come to reflect that, relying on price and functionality as selling points. But recent efforts show there's still a role for advertising that appeals to consumers' hopes and feelings. Quote, quote. It's been one of the problems the industry has had. The messaging to date has been more tech and product-oriented rather than benefits-oriented, says Rob Enderle, a research fellow at Giga Information Group, a technology consultancy. You don't sell autos based on technology, but on envy, self-image, and personal benefits, says Jeff Davis, senior VP at Omnicom. The computer industry has become an industry focused on efficiency because price is so important. Because all PC marketers have access to the same components, it's now about branding. And it's just good block-and-tackle creative branding that will make a difference. Service and support are critical, he adds, but the cool factor is more important than ever. Likeability is important now more than ever, Mr. Davis says. And the marketer believes, who's more likable than Stephen? How about Hitler? That's just me talking, ladies and gentlemen. That's me interpolating. I'm not reading that. Dell began a price war in January 2001 in a successful attempt to grab the number one market share position among computer makers. Then in the fourth quarter, Omnicom broke a consumer campaign featuring the quirky character originally developed by Dell's previous agency, Interpublic. The concept seemed to be working. Dell kept it going even after switching agencies in spring 2001. Stephen simplifies Dell's consumer offerings by delivering straightforward, folksy musings on the benefits of a Dell PC and its many peripherals, or as the athletes say, peripherals. Omnicom's Doyle Dane Burnback agency added Stephen's buzz-generating line, "Dude, you're getting a Dell." Write them. As Pat Dermody, president of integration at Doyle Dane Burnback, says, yes, they have a president of integration. I do have a dream. But as she says, he says, whoever Pat Dermody is, quote, Stephen has made Dell more approachable in that he is a very human, warm, engaging character. The Stephen campaign has been good, says consultant Mr. Enderle, adding Steve is cruder than Apple ads, but it has an Apple feel to it. And from another trade publication, Dell Computer has a new motto. Dude, you're getting a t-shirt or a baseball cap or a backpack or anything else with Stephen and the "Dude, you're getting a Dell" tagline. Dell has now set its sights on apparel, unveiling this week a line of Dude gear accessories, including t-shirts, caps, notebook, backpacks, and CD cases. The PC maker says its foray into Dude gear is a natural extension of the commercials. Consumers can't get enough of Dude, so we've given them some stylish ways to express their enthusiasm, says Kurt Kirsch, director of new business development for Dell. You can buy our stuff to express your enthusiasm, says Kurt. Dell touts the clothing's subtle, cool look and hip, khaki college style. Learning how to express your enthusiasm, just one more way you get served, ladies and gentlemen, when I read the trades for you. It's a copyrightable feature. Thank you so much. Ladies and gentlemen, even though Charlie Rose is still a correspondent on 60 Minutes 2, Dan Rather is out as anchor of 48 Hours. Yeah, all Charlie did was violate CBS News policy on correspondents getting involved in commercial endorsements. But Dan, well, he's being edged out because the program is being moved to 8 p.m. Fridays, being renamed and turned into an edgier and cooler show. Although CBS chief executive Leslie Moonves at their unveiling of the new programming for the fall denied that the negotiations to re-sign David Letterman had anything to do with trying to make CBS edgier and cooler, especially at 10 o'clock, leading into the Letterman slot. Moonves insisted it was Rather's idea, saying he'd asked a year ago to be taken off the show. He asked out. This is the opportunity to do so, Moonves said. This is not a big announcement. The CBS Evening News made the news this week. It was a report on CBS Evening News that began the foo-foo in Washington about what did the president know. It was a story on Wednesday night on the CBS Evening News from their Pentagon correspondent that revealed the briefing in August at which the president was told something about something that was going to happen or not. And also this week, the same broadcast aired part of the terrorist video of the late Wall Street Journal reporter Daniel Pearl just before he was assassinated. They aired the part of it where he was made to admit that he was Jewish. And there was a huge controversy about that. White House and the family of Daniel Pearl, falling into the habit there, objected to the airing of it. Actually, not the White House, Justice and State Departments. The CBS Evening News aired that brief portion of the video, not the murder itself. The video is being circulated on some websites in the Arab world. Dan Rather said, introducing it, "We're about to show you edited portions of it so you can see and judge for yourself the kind of propaganda terrorists are using in their war against the United States." No other network has expressed interest in airing that video. As I say, Pearl's widow called CBS News president, asking him not to air the tape. So, is it a good day or a bad day at BlackRock?
Coming up this week on CBS Evening News, the parts of the Danny Pearl tape we didn't show you. What they can tell us about
It's Locked!
Our enemies and ourselves.
Daniel, it's me!
This better not be somebody edgy and cool. Brother Wallace.
Brother Rather, since when have you been keeping your door locked?
Since I've been giving interviews saying that we're too damn patriotic around here for our own good.
Well, Johnny Carson said that about the Super Bowl telecast. No one threatened him.
That we know about.
Mm.
So, sir, off to the vineyard already? Don't we have a little thing called the sweeps to finish?
No, I'm just dressed this way because I left my suit at Larry King. They press it for me.
Oh, well, come on inside. No use airing our clean laundry in public.
So, Daniel, where's the champagne?
Oh, I guess it's still in my wine locker. I haven't checked on it lately. The 83s are almost ready.
No, but I mean the celebration. Your shop broke the story of the week.
Well,
the intelligence briefing of the president.
Mm-hmm.
You've owned the last four news cycles. You should be very proud. This company should be very proud. The last time we got this much buzz on a story we broke, it was ALAR. And it was wrong.
Well, thank you, Michael. And yes, you're right. As Brazos County Rainwater, this company should be proud.
Funny thing, though, when you sit too high in the saddle, nobody wants to send you a pillow. No, I've noticed that, too. Our fearless leader has been too busy giving us the back of his hand for airing the Danny Pearl tape to have the time to shake the front of our hands. That doesn't quite track, but you know what I mean.
Sure, sure.
Look, Daniel, you didn't ask me, but did you have to show that tape? Couldn't you, I don't know.
What, a reenactment? A computer simulation? Yeah. Look, this was tough stuff, yes, sir. But if we're in a war that's serious enough for us to be cowed out of asking the hard questions, it's serious enough for us to see the enemy at work on tape.
No, I know, but you're right. It did take a little of the luster off your scoop, I guess.
No, sir. More to the contrary than a Galveston mule. I think airing the tape added to the luster of this organization. It helped redefine us. Mm. You know, we're not the ones who do all the five ways to prevent sleep apnea features. Did you know how many germs are on your dollar bill exposés? No, sir.
No.
We're the other guys.
Mm-hmm.
But that's just me talking, Michael. But don't mind me. I'm not edgy. I'm not cool.
Well, actually, you seem a little edgy.
Oh, I don't mean edgy the way you and I mean edgy. I mean edgy the way the little spitbag who cut me loose from 48 hours means edgy.
Letterman edgy.
Exactly.
Yeah, well, I'm sorry, Daniel. I had just heard about 48.
You know, it's not enough to be the only anchor whose broadcast is interstate straight and dead fullback hard. Now you've got to be cool, too.
Hmm. So what's cool?
The way I think it's going, it's about halfway between Dateline and 2020 downtown.
Oh, right, because regular 2020 isn't cool either.
That's correct, sir.
Daniel, look, we've had a great run.
Well,
neither of us looks like we're of mating age. Hell, you're 5 years older than Cronkite was when he...
Brother Wallace, I'm so tired of hearing about how much younger Uncle Walter was when he retired, I swear I could puke chili in church.
That would be a bad thing, Daniel.
Yes, sir, I guess it would.
Yeah.
And if I looked down my bench and I saw what Uncle Walter saw, here's Rather, here's Mud, here's everybody at 60,
you
know, I might think about slipping off the harness and just squatting in some hay for a while. But I let them chase me out of here. And what becomes of our flagship broadcast?
Well, it stays basically the same except for including highlights of the previous night's Letterman show. But look, this week's scoop should convince the powers that be that...
That what? That it isn't better to hype your ratings by featuring an exclusive interview with Brittany Spinks?
Spears.
Well, there you are. I really am not cool, am I? But I'll tell you this, sir, and hear me and mark this, please.
Mm-hmm.
I have dyed my hair for this news division, and I have gone gray for this news division. And if I have to start sneaking some coloring back in for the sake of the legacy of Edward R. Murrow, you can book it.
Daniel, 48 was always slumming for you. The quick cuts, the choppy writing, that wasn't you.
Well, that was a side of me.
Well,
I guess a cool side. But no, sir, that was a place I could visit any time I wanted, but it wasn't a place I live. I live on the hard news side of town. Everybody and his kinfolk know that by now.
Well, especially after this week.
So what you're saying, Michael, is this is a time for celebration?
That's exactly what I'm saying.
I knew I should have bought the 82s. They're drinkable now.
Well, Brother Rather, I raise a virtual glass to you. That's almost edgy, isn't it? A virtual glass?
Yes, sir.
And I'll see you before I leave for the vineyard.
Michael, sir, thank you. You've reminded me of what no one can ever take away from me. We owned 4 news cycles.
Take care, Daniel.
This week on the CBS Evening News, the parts of the Danny Pearl tape we didn't show you, and why now they can be seen.
Ladies and gentlemen, telemarketers, the purveyors of those sometimes aggravating mid-meal sales calls, suffer twice as many voice problems as the average person. No! Yes. A study of 304 telemarketing professionals found 1 in 3 suffered a loss of their voices that affected their work. The rate of vocal attrition among telemarketers was double that of a control group of 187 college students. Vocal attrition occurred more frequently among telemarketers who smoked, suffered frequent calls, had sinus problems, and dry mouth, or were sedentary. So before telling them to do that to themselves next time they call, tell them to take a lozenge. And, you know, scientists have long suspected that airplane condensation trails, those contrails, form larger cloud banks that substantially alter the atmosphere's heat balance and may play an important role in shaping our weather. Testing the proposition, of course, has been tricky. You can't just ground all the planes across North America, except meteorological researchers were presented with just such an opportunity last September 11th, when the FAA grounded flights nationwide for 3 days. And now it has emerged the American climate was indeed noticeably different during those 3 days without air travel. A team of climatologists showed temperatures in the U.S. fluctuate by 1.2 degrees Celsius more when airplanes were grounded than when normal flight patterns prevail. Planes in the sky dampen the variability between day and nighttime temperatures. More air travel brings less difference between noon and midnight. Hey, when you fly, it all seems like midnight. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes this edition of Le Show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations, over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USEN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the American Forces Network, on shortwave at WBCQ, the planet, 7.415 megahertz, and on your computer, around the world, whenever you want it, at two locations, www.harryshearer.com and www.kcrw.com. And it would be just like noon and midnight being the same, if you'd agree to join with me then. Would you? All righty. Thank you very much. Uh-huh. Email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. Le Show Internet Services by Steve Mack. And the C. Crane Company is proud to support Le Show. They offer long-range radios, antennas, and more for over 25 years. The C. Crane, initial C, period, Crane Radio Light and Science Catalog is available online at ccradio.com or by calling 1-800-522-8863. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of SAS, a satellite service of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.